chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Emily Chang on the Something Extra podcast. Emily is a wife, a mom, a seasoned executive, having worked for iconic brands such as Procter & Gamble, Apple, and Starbucks. She's currently the CEO of McCann Worldwide. She's also a speaker and the author of The Spare Room. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Emily, I'm so excited to have you on the Something Extra podcast. I've looked so forward to this. You and I got connected several months ago through CEO Forum, and you and I were talking offline a little bit, and we know a lot of the same people, which that's really cool. But the special thing about Emily, listeners, is Emily is sitting in Shanghai, and I am in St. Louis, Missouri, and I appreciate you so much, Emily, because it's 10 o'clock at night there, and I just appreciate you just making the time, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
I am too. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you grew up. So I know you didn't grow up in Shanghai. You grew up in the United States. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, when my father was getting his PhD at Georgia Tech. But very quickly, we ended up moving up and down the East Coast. I ended up in upstate New York, and that's where I spent most of my childhood, and then ended up going to undergrad and MBA, all in Rochester, New York.
Okay, very good. Now, what was your undergrad? Was that in marketing?
It was not. It was in biology, and I had a minor in chemical engineering because I was really interested in pre-med. And that was before biochemical degrees were available. So I sort of worked with my counselor and had that cobbled together. I loved biology. I love engineering. I've been encouraging my daughter, who's still got a couple years, to think about engineering because I think it teaches you a solutions-oriented mindset and sets you up no matter what career you want. So I guess I would be testament to that because I studied science undergrad. I studied finance in my MBA, and now I look after a couple of advertising agencies. I'm not sure if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? I totally agree with you. I think some of the most successful people are people that are more systems thinkers. You know, and I think that's what engineering does for you. You understand processes, you understand systems. And I always say for us, we're people centric, but you've got to have those systems in your processes so that you have consistency and sustainability. So tell me a little bit. I know that you're married to Minky. I know you've got Lainey, your daughter, who is just so special to you, Holly Berry, your rescue dog, and Scarlet, the pygmy hedgehog. Where in the world did you come up with a pygmy hedgehog?
Well, I have this bucket list of animals I've always wanted, including a teacup piglet, which I'm convinced exists, even though everybody tells me they just grew up to be regular pigs. I've always wanted a pygmy hedgehog. And one day, my daughter was part of these rescue groups online. She'd rescued a couple of dogs at that point, and she saw this pygmy hedgehog, actually two. And she came to us and she said, you know, I know mom's always wanted one of these. Should we rescue one? And we weren't sure, along with many other rescues, whether it would survive. but we did bring it home, and she was just 3 months old. She was this tiny little prickly thing. She was so cute. And even now, she's a pygmy, so she's not that much bigger. She can still fit in one hand. And who knew? Pygmy hedgehogs can get to know their owners, and they purr, and they recognize you by sight and sound and come running and cuddle, and she's the cutest thing.
Oh my goodness, that is amazing. Well, you know what? We had chickens for a very long time, and I would say to people, you would not think that chickens have personalities, but they do. They would see my car even driving in the driveway, and they would come running, like, you know, it's just so cute, you know? So I love your eclectic collection of different animals. So let's talk about your career. So you have worked for some really iconic brands. I mean, I think you were at Procter & Gamble for what, 11 years? You know, you've worked at Starbucks, you've worked at Apple, you've done a lot of different things there. So what was your first exposure to leadership?
My parents both worked, and they were immigrants. So they worked really hard. They didn't speak fluent English. They didn't really understand the American school system. So there are a lot of things I had to figure out on my own. And not only figure out, but I found myself serving as a bit of a bridge between my American school life and my Chinese home life. I think it made me really so much better as I got older, because I really enjoy playing that bridge role even today. Having been in global, regional market roles, you find if you can help one side understand the other perspective, that's half the battle in any job. And because my parents weren't around, I was taking care of my little brother. I think I was keeping myself busy. So I signed up for everything. I played tennis. I skied. I was in the band. I was in the orchestra. I wanted to try everything. And I think in some ways, I will say I was a little bit naive, because I didn't always understand the inside jokes. Frankly, they were probably about me more often than I would have known in retrospect. But I'm an eternal optimist. And because some things went over my head and maybe other things kind of slid off my back, I think I remained really optimistic. And I always had this attitude, well, let's try. You know, even now, my daughter has it ingrained in her. It never hurts to try. And there have been things I've raised my hand for, or things I got excited about and just tried, and people came along, and you kind of learn leadership, or you grow leadership muscles through trying something. And I think one of the things that I observe right now among the younger generation is there's a greater divide amongst those who define failure as failure and those who define learning as success. And it's a really fine line. If I'm willing to go try something and it doesn't work, I'm still cheering for myself because I was willing to try and I learned something. But I find there are some who are really hesitant and they don't try for fear of failure. I think that's where we contain ourselves, in a smaller box than probably what we were meant for.
So tell me this, was this something that was just innate in Emily? Is this something your parents instilled in you? Because you just said you've kind of instilled that in Lainey. I mean, she's got that in her DNA where she's not afraid to try things. Do you think that was from your parents? What do you think that was from? Just confidence, your faith? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I didn't come to know God until much later. My parents weren't around a whole lot. And like I said, they were just trying to create a new life for us in the States. So I would say maybe I learned as I went, but really in retrospect, though I was not familiar with God, I think God just played a really active role in my life from the time I was very young. You know, I think he shielded me from things that would have hurt me and I just didn't recognize. I think I have a fearlessness about me that I don't think I can take credit for, or anyone can. I think God's just given me a spirit of boldness. And I think that's also why my harvest field is probably the non-Christian workplace, because there are things I'm not afraid to say. And I think if I fall down, it doesn't devastate me. Sure, I get hurt like everybody else, but I can always find the good in something, and I can always find the way forward through the chaos. And maybe, you know, I'm not the smartest, I'm not the most creative, but maybe that's like my superhero power, which is I'm resilient. I can always see the positive in something, and it's not sort of this Pollyanna unrealistic. It's a tangible, okay, well, there's that step, and okay, I can see my way there. Or even on a broader scale, there have been, each of my career moves has been a big leap forward, I will confess. And I go into a job, and I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it, but I'm pretty certain I can figure it out from here to there. And then the rest is that, you know, sort of agility and the willingness to fall on your face and willingness to raise your hand and ask for help. Those are probably what have gotten me here.
Right. Oh, well, those are great. Because I was going to ask you some of your greatest leadership lessons. And I think sometimes as a leader, people have this feeling that they have to know everything. And that is so far from the truth. I think it also probably stems from humility, you know, and going in humbly instead of prideful, thinking, you know, that old adage, Emily, which I love, it says, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Yeah.
So tell me about challenges. Maybe is there a specific challenge that you can think of that you've gone through?
So one of the things I talk about is a discomfort index. And I think it's important to know what our own index is. Mine's really high. I don't mind being thrown blindfolded into a completely new space and having to feel my way through. In fact, that's pretty fun for me. So if I were to give myself a score, I'd say I'm probably 80% on a discomfort index. So I like new experiences. I don't think it's to pat myself on the back. It's to say those are the places in which I thrive. But I think it's equally important if you have a very low discomfort index to recognize that and put yourself in places where you thrive, which is probably not being blindfolded and dropped in a strange country. Maybe for you, you thrive when things are a little steadier, when there's a framework, when you know what to expect when you go in every day. So one thing I would say is not just agility, but knowing I like to be in that circumstance.
Oh, that's good. Because some people don't like solving challenges, right? I mean, they would like things to be more steady. I was with one of our really high level, she's more like over customer success at Technology Partners. And we were talking yesterday and, you know, have a situation. And she just dug in. She goes, Lisa, I love spreadsheets. I love digging in and figuring things out. And I'm like, I am so glad that you love that, you know? But I mean, there are some people that they thrive on that, right?
Exactly.
So how would you describe your style of leadership that you have built over the years?
I'm going to borrow from something somebody said to me one day at IHG. She was running one of my departments and she called me a 3D leader. And I said, I'd love to hear more about what that means to you. And she said, you're three-dimensional because when I need you to stand in front and set a vision, you do that. Sometimes I need you to sit alongside me with your sleeves rolled up and work with me. And sometimes I need you to push me from behind so I can shine in the spotlight. And she said, I've had leaders of all three types, but I haven't had a leader who can flex and do all three of those things. She said, you're a 3D leader to me. And I don't think, Lisa, I am all the time. I mean, we're not at our best all the time, but when I'm at my best, I think I am that leader. I'm willing to stand in front when I need to and charge. I'm willing to defend my team, protect them. But I'm also absolutely willing and delighted to stand behind them and push them into the spotlight and give them all the credit.
Awesome. I love that. Well, right now you're the CEO of McCann Worldwide, and you said that really what you realized mattered to you the most was the head, heart, and soul. So can you dig into that a little bit further and tell us what you meant by that?
As you can tell from the book, which we talked about offline, I like models. I like frameworks that I create in my mind. They give me a sense of structure, and then I kind of fill them in. Sometimes I blow them up. Sometimes I stretch them. When I took a year to write the book, it was the first time I'd taken a break in my professional career. And I had always been recruited from one job to the next into absolutely brilliant jobs. And I feel incredibly grateful. But after the book had been signed with a publisher, was the first time in my life that I had a blank sheet of paper and thought, what do I want to do next? I want to go back to work. I love work, but I don't know where. I liked each of my companies. I liked each of my industries. And what you find is when recruiters call, they have two questions. One, what industry? Two, what region? And those are not decision-making factors for me. So I had to sit back and ask myself, well, what are my factors? Because I don't want to just answer questions and say, I could live anywhere. I could do anything, because that's not helpful to anybody. So I really got to the point of what drives me. And there were three things: head, heart, and soul. Head, in the sense that I love, we used to call them BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals. I love intellectual challenges. Today, to me, that is in the digital space. Yet that doesn't really filter, because absolutely every business has to figure out how to digitize in a variety of ways. But that's head. Heart is, I love building into people. You know, I'm a 3D leader or a servant leader. That's what gives me joy. That's not just the kind of leader I am. That's what feeds me. And so my heart yearns to build into people, engage with them, nothing gives me more of a thrill than feeling somebody, especially a young person, not feel intimidated by the title or the office, but just come right up to me and say, hey, can I ask you a question? Will you help me with this? That gives me such great joy. And to watch them grow and thrive is my deepest joy that comes from my job. And then soul is, I just stopped to write this book called The Spare Room, which is all about authentic leadership. And I wanted to find a company whose ethos matched mine. That was really important to me. And, you know, I've worked for a variety of companies, bosses, in industries and in regions. And I would say I can flex to a lot of those things. But at this stage, in the back half of my career, after what I called my hashtag professional halftime, what was really important to me was finding a company where I felt like I could really be myself. And that's fundamentally what DE&I is all about. Where do you feel like you can bring your whole self to work? And that's soul. So head is intellect. Heart is having a sizable team that I can build into because that's my joy. And then soul is feeling like I can fully be myself at this company and bring my best every day.
You know, you're a big believer in employee engagement, you know, so what specifically have you done in this new role to build employee engagement? Can you give us some tactics and things that you've done?
My simple model is, do you know Janus? I think he's a Greek god. He has two faces. It's the idea of holding two seemingly opposing ideas together and finding the synchronicity between the two. I think people need a sense of security and they want to be delighted by surprising moments of joy. So as leaders, it's imperative, I think, that we think about serving up both of those things. One is the expected and the other is the unexpected. The expected means I will have weeklies with you and you can count on me. I'll show up on time. We have a set agenda. You have clear KPIs. When I send out a meeting, I'm anal. I always have who, what, when, where. And frankly, if you don't send me a meeting with any context, I'll decline it because I don't know what it's about and I'm not going to be prepared for it. So these are all expected behaviors that people know. They're predictable patterns. And while predictable sometimes may seem boring, like, oh, she's so predictable, I actually think as a leader, predictability, consistency of behavior is great because it gives the organization a sense of confidence that I know how she's going to be. I know what to expect. I can go into this meeting prepared and I'm not going to be thrown off guard because that gives me a sense of instability, insecurity, possibly fear. Those are the expected. Then equally, it sits upon our shoulders to create the unexpected. So where do we create moments of joy? How do we pause and recognize? How do we realize that there are moments we need to celebrate? It's too easy to gloss over those in the spirit of work, 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 what's next, but that's what leaders need to do. So we spend a lot of time, and you know, this is my joy. So I think I do it pretty well because I love doing it. For instance, over winter, we won a couple of Beijing Olympics projects. I'm like, hey, we should celebrate that. Wouldn't it be fun? Because we have a couple different floors in a high rise that each floor did a different Winter Olympics game. And we could do like bobsledding, indoor ice skating, and we could set up these little staged things. It doesn't cost a lot of money. It's pretty messy, but it's really fun. And at the end, we can create these McCann Olympics pins, you know, gold, silver, bronze. Just a fun half day. My head of admin is always like, oh, here we go again. But these are great ways to inspire and just inject some joy into your daily rhythm. By the way, when it's intentionally curated, it's a really fun event. It's bringing the floors together. So they're finding ways to cross-pollinate ideas and engage, not on a specific work-related thing, but just enjoy as part of the extended McCann family. And when you win a pin, it's frankly, if you want to use boring corporate words, it's employee branding. You're giving a takeaway that people will put on their bags or on their shirt or on their jacket. And others will ask, what is that? How come you got one of those? What's going on at your company? And what an awesome story to say, oh, that's from the Olympics when I bobsledded down the stadium stairs on the 22nd floor.
Wow. I mean, so creative. And sometimes I say it doesn't have to be something super elaborate. It can be simple things like that. But Emily, it takes intention and it does take focus and thought toward that, right? We get whatever we focus on will expand. So, I mean, you creating those moments of joy and being focused on that, you know, is obviously expanded because I know, and I don't know specifically the engagement numbers, but I know I've read like the engagement numbers have significantly improved since you've been there. You've made a lot of positive improvements, you know, with the business since you've been there. But we do need to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with Emily Chang.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
So welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Emily Chang. Emily, I am having so much fun with you. And I I realize that we need hours together, not
Agreed.
Just a few minutes. We need hours together. But I don't want to embarrass you. But in 2022, Emily was awarded the Women to Watch of Greater China by Campaign Asia. It's one of the most prestigious recognitions in the marketing and advertising industry. She sits on the board for SOS, Children's Villages. My goodness, you're doing so much. So I have to ask you, what does a day in the life look like for Emily Chang? How do you balance it all? And you've got Minky and you've got Scarlet, your pygmy hedgehog. You've got Lainey. Emily, how do you balance it all? How do you get it all done?
I think I'm going to just pull two things sitting alongside my computer. I think the first thing is we have to eliminate the word balance, right? Let's say this is my family, this is my work. If I'm trying to balance these things, what you see is all my effort is focused on that act itself versus invested in each of the things individually. And it's constant tweaking and adjustment. It's not joy. Integration, which is sticking them together, realizing they might be kind of messy, realizing they don't fit perfectly, but that one ebbs and flows into the other, is my model. And it works much better. So I'll give an example. We've had 17 kids in our spare bedroom over the last 22 years. We had one special needs boy who was with us for the last 6 months. My husband and I both work. My daughter's in school. How are we going to add this extra kid on top of a very busy schedule? If we had a babysitter, I'd have to rush home and try and relieve the babysitter at a certain hour. That would never work. I have an hour commute each way to and from work. If I had to get meals set for him, I mean, all of these things, if you think about balance, would have broken the system. But the idea of integration allows me to think more creatively. So I decided to bring him to work with me. He sits in the car with me for an hour to work, an hour from work. I lose 2 hours of working in the car, but somehow that time gets made up because I start and end my day with joy, with this amazing little boy who came to us and only grunted, couldn't make any noise, and then learned the word hi. And he would just sit next to me and go, hi. And we would sing together and he would hit his car seat as a drum and we would just play the entire time. And what's amazing is I have the privilege of having a driver here in China. And so the driver loves him and takes him down into the car park and plays with him. And it's really a village of drivers and building janitors who hang out with this little boy all day. He takes a nap in the back seat of the van. It's very unconventional. Is the car park the best place for a kid? Maybe not. But he's actually surrounded by people who love him and he's living his life with joy. Sometimes if I'm free and I don't have a meeting or something cancels, I'll run down and see him or my driver will bring him up. He circles around the agency and he brings joy everywhere he goes. It's a very unusual circumstance. My van's a mess. It looks like a daycare, but it works for us. It works great. So this idea of walking away from balance, feeling like the plates have to be spinning in the air or that things have to be at a perfect equilibrium and saying, you know what, let's think more creatively about this. What's a different way to get these things done? And maybe one has to fit on top of the other. I find we can do so much more because we're made to be creative beings. We get stuck in a framework that we've grown up with. And there are certain things we just take for granted. And to answer your question about a day in the life, I'll give another example. We're used to seeing what schedules look like. Schedules schedule hour meetings. Well, you can change that. It's a little hack, but I will never schedule an hour meeting. It's 45 to 55 minutes max. That last 5 minutes, surely if you know you don't have those 5 minutes, you will squeeze 60 into 55 minutes. I know you can. Now you have 5 minutes to walk to the next meeting, take a bio break, take a deep breath, compartmentalize, close that chapter, and then start the next meeting fresh. There are so many different things we can do when we start questioning, why do I do it that way? What's a different way I might work? You know, I don't have an office now. So I have agencies on different floors. So I sit on a different floor each day. You know, we talk about hot desking. We talk about agile work models. There's no reason we can't operate that way. And it allows visibility more evenly across the different floors of our building, which works great for me. And I love being able to see everybody. Otherwise, you can very easily find yourself in your office all day long and people queue up outside and you haven't even gone out. It might be your office and the bathroom. But what a shame when there are all these beautiful faces that you want to come in contact with.
Emily, it's like you're going to miss that person, you know, in the bathroom, or you're going to miss that interaction with the person in the hallway. You know, as the leader, for them to see you, you could fill up their cup and something you say could change the trajectory of their day. Or, you know, even if they're facing a challenge, one thing you could say could help the light bulb go on for them.
But they're not going to send you an email or walk into your office. But when you create intentionally that visibility in a casual way, then you're creating opportunities for creative collision. I think the other thing it allows us to do is it allows us to take down the walls of awe. So when I walk around, I have it in my calendar called WAT, and it's color-coded a different color. It's walking around time. It's just 10 minutes between meetings. And I make sure I have WAT across different floors. Here's what you can do. You don't just walk around. In the beginning, when I first joined and I didn't know a lot of people, it's a little awkward, but that's my job. As a leader, it's our job to be awkward. It's our job to put others at ease at our own expense. So sometimes I would walk around and nobody would stop me. They would kind of look down when I came. And so I'm smiling and walking and I go a circle and maybe nobody's talked to me, but that's okay because that's my job. Over time, you start walking around and people will be like, oh, hey, since you're here, can I just show you something? Or wait, I have a quick question for you. And here's a real true story. I was walking around one floor and somebody said, hey, how big is your head? And I said, I don't know. Would you like to measure it? I said, I absolutely would. That's exactly why I came here. And it turns out there had been this conversation about size of your head. And someone's like, your head is the biggest head on the floor. They started measuring everyone's head and writing it on my manager's door. And they decided to measure my head. So there's this picture of me sitting on a yoga ball because it was the only thing to sit on. And they're measuring the circumference of my skull. And I think intentionally sitting on the yoga ball, saying, yes, I would love my head measured. Yes, let me write my name here. It starts helping people see the human behind everything else that they see. And you can't do that if you're not creating walking around time.
And I know for you, one of your leadership tenets, I think, is authenticity. And like you said, the humanness. But before you took the job as the CEO for McCann, you took a little sabbatical and you wrote the book, The Spare Room, which I have a copy of it here and have read most of it. You took in, you said, life was full, rewarding, and truth. We didn't realize anything was missing until we met. Is it Teo?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Teo. At just 18 months, he was still the size of a newborn. He was dying. He'd been born with extreme hydrocephalus and head so distended. But the time you met him, he was unblinking, unresponsive, had already endured unspeakable pain and tragedy. And you and Minky were like really talking about this. And you're like, we don't know if Lainey can handle this. And that just touched my heart so much, Emily, because she's like, Mommy, Daddy, what baby are you talking about? And I think she was like only 4 or 5 at the time. And you tell her the situation and she said, yes, we have to go get him now. And I just think about precious little Lainey's heart. I mean, you said bringing him into your home has served as an inflection point for our family. Though his situation had seemed overwhelming, we found we always have capacity to invest in our social legacy, and our lives become incredibly enriched when we lean into that commitment. I also realized that being intentional, my personal purpose, has made me a more effective leader at work. And I love that story, and just, you know, out of the mouth of babes, right? But, you know, tell our listeners a little bit, because it's the offense. You figure out what your offer is, the offense, and then the intersection of that's your social legacy. So Tell us a little bit more about offer, and then we'll go into offense because, you know, I told you about the 17 sustainable development goals and things like that. I think it will really help our listeners.
Yeah, to me, this absolutely is something extra. And the something extra I'd say is something we all think about and embrace to varying levels, but perhaps we don't put words to. And I really believe there is a deep power to words. So the framework is really simple, but by filling out each of the thoughtful exercises, my desire is that this isn't a book or an anthology of stories you read. It sparks action and it sparks intention, because I do believe I fell into something, but I would love for others to learn from me and start much earlier, because these younger generations, they are so switched on. They want to lead with intention. They're asking purposely now, what do I want to live for? I think it's extraordinary. I didn't start asking these questions till much later in my life. So the simple model is there's an offer and there's an offense. Your offer is that unique package of who you are and the value you uniquely bring, whether it is your resources, perhaps time and money, your experiences, your skills, or your personality traits. What is that bundle that uniquely makes you you? And then on the other side, there's your offense. And that is the thing that calls to you more than anything else. We're offended by a lot of things. I try to never use plastic bottles. That offends me. But does it literally stop me in my tracks and make my heart race? No, that's probably not my offense. It bothers me, and I'm going to do what I can to always use a cup. But my offense is vulnerable, marginalized, and hurt children. That's why when I was younger, I studied science, because I wanted to be in pre-med. And you know, I realized this passion that called to me, maybe doesn't mean it becomes my career, my professional career, but it's something I can meaningfully contribute toward in my life. So if I define my offer and my offense, the intersection becomes what I call social legacy. And the reason I picked this phrase is it's a little bit more intentional. It's more precise than purpose. Legacy simply means you're leaving something better than you found it. And social defines the space in which you want to have that impact. So my social legacy is good kibun. It's a Korean phrase that one of our spare room guys taught me, which is comfort for the spirit. And actually, it harkens back to our previous conversation about a sense of belonging, because isn't that what a comfort for the spirit is? When you walk in my home, if you can feel that your spirit is at peace, wow, that is the nicest compliment anyone has ever paid me. And it made me become more intentional about the kind of house that we're renting right now, about the furniture that I choose. Maybe I won't have the fanciest or most elegant, but it'll really be comfortable. And then I realized this transcends into work. That's what I want work to be. I want it to have great kibun. You know, I came into one of our agencies. A young girl was just white in the face as I walked in with her. And I remember asking her, are you okay? She said, well, this happens every day I come into work. My heart starts racing and I can't catch my breath. She was literally feeling immersed in anxiety the minute she walked in. And I was brand new. And I said, what can we do to make that stop? How do we help you feel differently? And she said, well, what would differently be? I said, you come in and it's the opposite. You feel like you can shrug all the burdens off and there's a sigh of relief because you're here. She said a sad thing. She said, I've never felt that in any workplace. And it really just charged me up. And I thought, that's going to be my workplace. You're going to come in and go, yes. And you know, we've just come off of 3 months of lockdown, not normal lockdown, like house arrest lockdown in Shanghai. And people couldn't wait to get back to work. They were itching. And the day they came back, they celebrated. That probably happened all over the world. But here, people were deeply joyful that they got to be back at McCann. And I feel like, okay, we're starting to do something right here.
That is beautiful, because we spend so much time with our work family. And it's a tragedy to think that people are not feeling peaceful there, or they feel anxiety. So we do. I think that is our job as leaders, to make sure that it's a psychologically safe place, that it is a place where people can bring their whole self. I mean, I'm very much of a, we're not one-dimensional people. And you've already talked about that, the head, heart, and soul, and making it a place where people can do that. You know, the other thing I told you is, when you're talking about your offense, you know, what is your offense? I love that you even give the figure of the sustainable development goals, and there's 17 of them. And really, sometimes I think people just kind of need a little bit of a catalyst. you know, to get them thinking. And you do that in the book, which I absolutely love. And it could be no poverty, zero hunger, good health and well-being, quality education. I mean, the list goes on. But thank you so much for writing this book. You know, the world, I tell you what, if everyone takes what you've written here and they apply it to themselves personally and their family, our world is going to improve.
That's my hope. And that's why I told you before, I don't want to get anything personal out of the book. And I've designed it to make sure I don't. Because it's so easy to let ego get the best of you. It's so easy to state one intention, but somehow get lured into something else, a different state of being, because we're humans. So we give away 100% of the retail value. Like, in fact, every book that gets sold is a cost to me. And I want it to be that way. This has always been God's project. And I don't ever want it to risk becoming something about me. You know, I said before, it's not just an anthology of stories. It's a call to action. I would love for it to not be a book, but sort of the next pay it forward. So when we ask each other, how are you paying it forward? Hey, who knows who came up with that phrase originally? Probably no one, but you know the phrase. I would love that people one day ask, what's your spare room? They don't know me, but they know this is a concept that's worth considering and embracing. And you're right, there's an amplification effect. I remember reading a statistic, Lisa, that said, if every church in America adopted one child who didn't have a home, there would be no homeless children in America. I mean, these things are doable.
They are definitely doable.
If we can catalyze, not everyone feels called to adopt a child who needs a home. That's the other thing about this model. If we aren't trying to convince each other of our causes, rather we define our own social legacy, what we will start doing is finding our own tribe, people who are like-minded and like-spirited, who feel called to that same thing. And oh my goodness, what power there is when we find each other versus let me tell you why, you know, we should not be drinking bottled water. I'm not diminishing that cause. That is really important as well. But when you find your thing and then you find someone else who shares that thing, you're like, what are we going to do? And that's when everything begins.
It's when the magic happens.
Exactly.
You know, it's getting people that are like-minded like that and you can make things happen. So that's so beautiful. I just love it. Well, Emily, we've talked about so many things, but I have to ask you, the common thread with all these podcasts is, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
To me, the something extra, I'll call it confetti. I remember at one of my jobs, when I walked in the room, somebody said, ah, here comes the confetti. And I said, I can't tell if that's an insult or a compliment. What does that mean? And she said, it means that you're bringing the fun. It means that you're bringing something extra. We know you're going to get work done. I do have high expectations and I do work really hard and I do expect my teams to work hard. I would like to think that I am that confetti. I mean, what a wonderful visualization. If I walk in and that's what you see, that's delightful. So I think the something extra is, how do you bring a little confetti to the place? Again, like you said earlier, it takes intention. Imagine a little extra fun. How do you imagine a moment of joy, a little delight you can leave for somebody? This is something I just wrote a blog post about today, in fact, which is, it takes 2 seconds extra to write a proper response. But you know, everybody who reaches out to you on LinkedIn, how often do I click the pat answer, no thanks, or yes, me too, or likewise? I'm not going to do that anymore. It literally takes 2 more seconds to say, thanks, but I'm not interested. Or good for you. Great job. Congratulations. But these little tiny
good
moments,
luck.
You know, they're all little confetti. They're like little moments that somebody says, oh, you bothered to write me back. It's just a small thing, but I think these micro moments add up to something really meaningful. And we never know if something that is just so small to us is actually something so big to somebody else.
Yeah, words matter. And so consider our words. And I always just, you know, my prayer is less of me and more of you. You know, I need that. I need the wisdom. I need wisdom that is otherly, Emily, in every interaction, right? And interactions are precious. So tell our listeners how they can find you. You know, how can they get the spare room before we sign off here?
Definitely connect with me on my website. It's a great landing place. It's social-legacy.com. You can follow socials where we share extra videos and behind the scenes connections with the heroes of the spare room at thespareroom.emilychang. Facebook and Instagram. And I'm on LinkedIn. You can just look up Emily Chang 8621. You can buy the book anywhere, Amazon, Walmart, at your local bookstore. And thank you so much. Because like I said, all of the value of the book gets donated to SOS Children's Villages. So it directly supports children who do in fact need a spare room.
Which is so beautiful. Well, Emily, this has been such a delight. I know this is going to be one of the most fun things I do all day long. So thank you so much for being the confetti in my day today.
I loved it. It's the perfect way to end a great day.
It is. Take care.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.